You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 252. And welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you in my basement, Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show from Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
What is happening out there, all you beautiful podcast listeners?
Yes. And from Florida, I forget where, Fort Lauderdale?
Yes, generally speaking.
Sure. Yeah. Which body of water is that on?
Atlantic.
Oh, okay. I don't know why that's relevant. But from the Atlantic coast of Florida, Mr. Adam Eisenberg.
Hey, how's it going?
That's not in the Gulf of Mexico, eh?
No.
You're sure?
No, I have actually never dipped a toe in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, it's just full of like oil and mutants now anyways, right?
Yes, now I would definitely not dip a toe in it.
Hmm. The challenge of geography on the Punk News Podcast. So, okay. So, we have a whole bunch of stuff that is, that's going on tonight. We have a bunch of stories we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about punk rock bowling and the disqualified winners thereof. We're going to talk about a new Fat Records comp that's coming out, the new High on Fire release, some crazy Sex Pistol credit cards stuff. A remix of one of the new Ceremony songs, a video from Russia that a lot of people in punk news seem to have something to say about, and another video featuring, I think, John, one of your faves, the Screaming Females there. Mm. So, and then also this week, we are celebrating 1995 because as far as arbitrary anniversaries go, this is one of them. It was 20 years ago, right? Am I wrong?
20 years ago was 1995.
Yes. Yeah. So therefore, the internet has to talk a lot about it this week. Now, I don't know. Did we coordinate that with anyone? Because it seemed like we started talking about it this week, and at the same time, everyone else published their 1995 articles.
Well, listen here. I'm saying we announced our 1995 week on Friday, but everybody else announced their 1995 week on the following Monday. I'm just saying.
Like, is there something specific about, you know, like, what is it, June 10th that makes the time to celebrate 1995 and not, like, I don't know, April?
There's actually a very concrete answer to that, and it's the following. There are no huge records coming out this week, so there's open space to do, I guess, nostalgic look-backs, if you will, as opposed to what's hip and new this week. That's the true answer.
Although if we were actually I would on say top if, of things... I would say if your record did come out this week, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, like, if Punk News was on top of things and when new records came out, we absolutely had coverage going on of them at the moment, then that would be a valid thing to say, but not really, you know.
Well, hey, we've been pretty good about that, man. We've been nailing new releases on the day they come out for a good year now, honestly, I'm saying.
I think I'm just projecting records I don't review, but I said I'd review, like, 7 years ago. His guilt just weighs upon me today.
Well, you should feel guilty about that physical record you asked for.
Which one?
It was like The Briefs or something.
Oh, fuck The Briefs. God damn it. One day I'm going to review that.
He specifically asked you guys want physical. And I said, all right, you whole sentence physical, guys, but you got to review it. So I'm just saying, Adam.
There's this Briefs box set that I haven't reviewed. It's amazing. One day I'll review it. There's a Word document that's on my computer that has like this incredibly high concept, artful review of it that I was working on. But
I'm not even talking about the Briefs box. I'm talking about a Briefs 12-inch.
I don't even know what you're talking about then. Fuck.
Adam, you are in the Briefs hole. You might have to fall for Briefs.
I let down my favorite band so much by being horrible. Anyways, so yeah, that's going on. John, what we got
to
talk about?
Well, listen, you talk about how you're being horrible to the Briefs, man. Adam, I got to say, this week on Twitter, this week on Facebook, you're kind of all over the place, man. Is everything going all right over there, dude? Everything peachy up there in Canada? What's happening, man?
I'm having an existential crisis of some sort, and I'm probably about like 40% of the way through it right now.
Well, for what reason?
I don't know. I'm restless. You know, I was looking at I was looking at the LinkedIn there as you do, because I'm a consummate professional and I, you know, make sure that shit's up to date. And not only have I been at my day job, which I enjoy, don't get me wrong, for 10 years at this point. Not that anyone really said anything about that, not that I'm bitter, but not only have I been there for 10 years now, but I'm doing stuff for Punk News for 15. And I don't know, those two things, they're like, they're again talking about arbitrary numbers. They're hanging over me saying, all right, dummy, what are you going to do now? You got to do something. You got to make something happen. You got to make a move. You got to shake something up. So
you feel as though you haven't done anything wild or interesting recently and you need to do something like that?
I feel like I'm on my laurels a little bit and I need to do something out there and something new. I need to add a new thing to the mix and not necessarily at the expense of anything. Not, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to like go live in the woods and make canoe paddles or anything like that. But I feel like I need a project that I can, I don't know, focus all of this, you know, midlife crisis. And I'm assuming I'm going to live till 60, all this midlife crisis energy into. Right. So I got ideas, John. I got all sorts of ideas and I'm toying them around in my head. And I have people that I need to run these ideas by. I'm amassing a brain trust, but they don't know they're my brain trust yet, but they're going to be. And I feel that I need to corner them at some point in the next month or so and be like, this is what I want to do. Is this insane? And start to get some feedback and some, you know, some advice from people that I trust. The problem is I want to do that before the idea is slightly less insane. So I want to get these people on board like tomorrow and be like, hey, here's this half formulated idea that I have, blah, and then like barf them out all this information. And they're going to go like, okay. And then, you know, try to walk away or ignore me or close their Twitter window or whatever. So I need to focus all this, John. I need to amass it into a concise ball of crazy project and then execute on that. But we're not there.
That's the way you got to do it, though. You can't overthink it. Once you get this crazy spark, you just got to let it in the open, and then it'll catch on, and that's when you roll with it. When you start second-guessing yourself, when you start having other people say, well, you should do it this way, that's what kills it. When you see that wave, you got to grab the boogie board, hop on, and go for the ride. That's how you got to do it.
Yeah, this is what I'm in the midst of. I'm in the midst of, like, I have unfocused creative earnings that I need to go, like, if I could in a non-violent way just like go into my backyard and just shoot a gun into the air, then that would probably deal with most of my problems right now, but I can't do that.
Adam, are these punk related or non-punk related ideas?
They're tangentially related to what we're doing. They're punk related in ways. You know, I'll put it that way. I'm trying to take where I am and take what I've been doing and what I've learned and the connections I've made and use that to like to launch something new.
True last question. Adam, are you starting a dad band?
Oh man, if I could only play an instrument and new people. I guess, you know, the playing the instrument, this is punk rock, isn't really that important, right? It's more like if I only knew people who would talk to me. Like I need to like get like human beings into a room. Although I could just get, I guess, like a drum machine and like three drum machines.
Dude, that'd be like avant-garde.
Yeah, and I'd be
Adam and his package.
What was the name of the Black Flag drum machine? Was it
Dale Nixon?
Yeah, Dale Nixon. So, you know, I can get like him and like three of his cousins.
That'd be great. The Adam White and Dale Nixon band.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know what I'd do. I have a bass somewhere in here. It would kind of be like the worst version of Death from Above 1979 you've ever heard. Anyways, this is what people tune in for, is my problems. So, did we get any mail recently, John? Or do you have anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, man. Listen, I had a shitty week this past week. I mean, nothing super major, but I had a friggin' shitty week. And I don't know what it is, man. Over the past week, people have just been fighting with me. Trolls, people I know in real life, people I know at the Punk Roxy, people have been fighting with me, man. And I think I think bloodlust breeds bloodlust. So ever since the Big Ben Weasel Rumble, which I'm glad we did, honestly, people have just been looking to battle, you know. And I got to say, man, I'm getting tired from battling everybody. And I got to say, I should have pulled this up beforehand. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. Basically, what happens was is you guys know I'm a big fan of Ariel Pink, and a lot of the readers aren't necessarily big fans of Ariel Pink, and so they kind of try to bust my chops. But so here's what somebody said: anybody surprised John G posted this Ariel Pink video? And I said, oh, I really do think this is great. The whole album is weird, bizarre, and seems to be shards of songs stapled together. There are songs about murder, beach parties, jello, goths, frog princes, and other weird stuff. We need more of this. There are already plenty of songs about whiskey and friendships. Plus, if it's good enough for Don Balls, it's good enough for me. And this is what Shownuff said. He said, man, I dig where you're coming from, but you have to retire the whiskey and friendship rejoinder. It's trite, well-worn, and tired, and clearly you're more clever than that. And I thought about that. And honestly, I think Shownuff is correct. You know, over the past 2 years or so, basically my battle position has been that punk rock needs to be crazy and wilder, and that whiskey and friendship bands suck, and I hate them, and I wish they would go away. And, you know, I heard through the grapevine, this may or may not be true. Actually, a commenter posted this on Punk News. They said that the Restorations were mad at me for constantly picking on them. And in a way, the Restorations are right. When I attack what I consider to be bland, non-daring punk, I would usually hit Restorations and what's the other – Menzingers. In the past year, I actually kind of stopped doing that. But the year before, this year, I was smacking on those bands pretty often. And I guess the fact of it is I was worried that punk rock was going to become tamer, softer, more hive-minded, more collective, and less wild and less crazy. But the fact is, although that may have happened for, you know, 6 months or 8 months, it just – The perceived threat I had just didn't happen. I've been going to lots of wild and crazy punk shows lately, and I think the idea of, you know, the calmer, gentler punk maybe is still out there, and people are enjoying that, but it hasn't really affected the kind of punk rock that I want to see. So my worry that punk rock was going to become softer or less dangerous quite simply didn't happen. I think it happened for a very brief time, 6 months, 8 months, but now kind of punk rock is dangerous and wild again. And when I was smacking down on Restorations and Menzingers, I wasn't really attacking them. I was attacking what they seemed to represent to me, which I think Restorations and Menzingers had elements of what I was describing, but that doesn't describe all of them. So basically, the point is this, is I don't know why I've been fighting with people a lot. Maybe it's because I had a really shitty week this week, and at the end of the week, something really shitty went down. It was really just the tipping, and actually it wasn't even that big of a deal in real life. But it really just annoyed the hell out of me, and so I was fighting with a couple of different people, and I think people think John G likes to fight, but John G actually does not like to fight, particularly because John G fights a lot during his day job. So Punk News is kind of for fun, you know.
And John G just wants to love.
I really do just want to love. I really do. Of course, but there's always the problem is I want to give my honest opinions of bands. Like Blink-182 is not a good band, and I'm not going to lie and say, oh, they're a good band. They're just not a good band, you know. But and the point is this: is I was attacking Menzingers and Restorations, and you know maybe the fact is they're not my cup of tea. They're not the kind of music that I listen to. But I did hit them too hard and too often, and I was probably overly critical of them just because I was using them as a symbol to attack a greater concept than what they actually represented. So I don't know if it's true that the Menzingers are bummed out. That's what somebody said in the comments. I looked into it. I couldn't find any evidence of that, but maybe it's true. So to the Menzingers and the Restorations, if I hit you guys too hard – well, no, if I was too mean or if I was too critical or if I was unfair to you, I do apologize. And if you guys see me in person, I'd love to tell you I was too hard, too mean, and basically too prejudiced towards your bands, the Menzingers and the Restorations. And it's a new era for John in that I'm still going to give my true opinion, and I'm going to say bands I don't like, But I mean, honestly, I'm just tired of rumbling, tired of fighting, tired of brawling it out. The Ben Weasel the scrap up was great because it's kind of like fighting the Nazis. But I'm not like, I don't want to get in a war with like, I don't want to get in a war with like France, you know, or England. They're all right. I like France and England, you know. I want to beat up Nazis, not guys that just, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, but are fine fellows and fine music. So I don't know, man. I'm just tired of fighting.
People are going to take your analogy there and be like, John Gentile calls Ben Weasel a Nazi.
Oh, don't put that in anybody. Ugh. That battle's over too. I mean, that battle was a lot of fun, but that battle is over. You know what I mean?
So you're all about the love now.
Well, I always am about the love. I never perceive myself as an aggressor, but the problem is when people poke me a little bit, I come on full force because like, why are you attacking me? I haven't attacked you, so I'm going to beat you into the ground. When honestly, in a lot of modern internet culture, like you're allowed to do a free swipe, and if somebody fights you back, then that guy's the jerk, you know? So I just got to get used to internet culture where you kind of get a passive-aggressive free swipe for free. I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to, I guess, try to ignore when people do that to me.
Adam Eisenberg, are you fighting anyone, or are you losing your mind, or?
I'm not really fighting anyone at the moment, which is a good thing.
Everything's chill.
Yeah, which is good for other people because I fight dirty.
Yeah, Adam Eisenberg, good people don't fight me because I fight dirty. Listen, we got some mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Here's a quickie. This is from Ryan. And actually, Ryan is responding to Tricky Ricky Frankel getting a condom with his War on Women record. This is what Ryan said. Hey, guys, I just wanted to add something I've heard come up a couple of times. I also ordered the War on Women record from Bridge 9, which is a great record, by the way. And I got a condom in my order, too. I tweeted about it, and it was made very clear to me from Bridge 9 and War on Women that War on Women has a sponsorship from Glide Vegan Condoms because War on Women supports the three Ps, punk rock, pleasure, and take a guess. And actually, I'm not sure what he means, but conversations like this between a band, its label, and a fan is what makes punk rock the best musical community there is. Oh, and actually, he's got a link to the tweet. Let me click on it. Love the show. Keep it coming. I'll be listening. Cheers from Ryan. Well, Ryan, thanks for writing in. I appreciate that. And let's see. Oh, here we go. Oh, no, that's what they said. War on Women. No, Glide Vegan Condoms said, War on Women and Bridge 9 support the three Ps, punk rock, pleasure, and, well, take a guess. So you can take whatever guess you want. Do you guys want to do this longer discussion, or should we say that to another time? Or the second email we got?
The longer discussion, thinking about it right now, is making me tired. Why don't we tease the longer discussion? We'll tell people we'll talk about it next week. Tell them maybe what it's about
a little bit.
Actually, and that commits us to doing it.
And also, here, the listener, now that we're on a weekly schedule or weekly posting schedule, the listeners can write in. So Jared wrote into us, and I'm going to paraphrase Jared's article. Jared's article asked the following question. And actually, you know, a lot of bands right now there are at least four bands that I know that are in this situation. And the situation is the following: these four bands that have nothing to do with each other, at least one member has been accused of sexual assault. And whatever band you're thinking it is, it probably isn't that band, or maybe it is, because there's actually a bunch of bands that are facing this issue. So these four bands have been accused of sexual assault. The punk rock community as a whole has been posting a lot of things on Tumblr, a lot of things on Facebook. So-and-so is a sexual predator. So-and-so is harmful towards women, and so forth, all over. None of these guys have had a trial. That being said, I don't know if it's true or not true, and nobody does, but maybe they are guilty, maybe they are. I couldn't say. And so the people – basically there's been a huge campaign all over social media – posting, accusing people of doing bad deeds, particularly sexual assault. Here's part one of our two-part question. When a band guy is accused of sexual assault, is that the appropriate avenue to basically post the accusation all over the internet in order to protect other people? Or is that wrongfully destroying somebody's character without giving them a full trial? Here's the second question, and this is the more daring and difficult question if you ask me. The second question is, with all four of these bands that are not related, but the members are accused of sexual assault, A lot of people have been saying to that band's record label, you should drop that band because you are supporting a sexual assaulter. Or what's the phrase? A sexual predator? Is that the phrase?
Well, they would just be alleged at this point, but I would say
alleged. Yeah, I mean, like,
I mean, I guess you would call them a sexual predator. Yeah,
okay,
an alleged sexual predator.
But I would point out that in these demands for these bands to be dropped from the label, they don't even say alleged. Generally, they just say this sexual predator should be dropped. Further, a lot of these fans and other people have saying to bands on the label that have nothing to do with the bands that are accused of sexual assault. This is other bands on the label. You should stop supporting your label because your label is supporting a sexual predator. And the third part of this is the following. And I know at least two bands that have been affected by this. Is when these bands that have a member accused of sexual assault go on tour, the punk rock community as a whole says to the other bands on the tour, you should drop off the tour because you're supporting a sexual predator. And people have even called some of these bands rape apologists, just simply for being on a tour with this band. Not that the bands on the tour with the accused sexual assaulters say they don't think a sexual assault happened. They just are silent or happen to be on the tour with the band that is accused of sexually assaulting somebody. So the question is, the second part rather, is what do you do in that situation? Should bands drop off that tour? Should labels drop people accused of sexual assault? Or should they not? What should they do? So to briefly summarize, the first question is, when a guy is accused of sexual assault in a band, what should the punk rock community do? How should the punk rock community handle that? Second question is, does a label have a duty to drop a band accused of sexual assault? Do other bands on that label have a duty to drop off that label? And third, do other bands on tour with a band accused of sexual assault have a duty to drop off that tour? You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And I'd be very interested to hear what you guys have to talk about. Adam E., man, it's 1995 week. Why don't you tell us a little – that was a horrible segue.
Yeah.
Segue, changing topics. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Changing topics. Adam E., man, it's 1995 week at Punk News. What's happening, man?
As our loyal readers will know, we've been running reviews from 1995 all week, looking back on some of the biggest albums of that year, as well as some of just staff favorites and probably the Punk News crowd's favorites as well. So in keeping with the brilliant corporate synergy that we're establishing, we're going to play a couple songs from 1995 tonight. And the first one is going to be now. In 1995, there was a band that included guys who used to be in Screeching Weasel, including Ben Weasel, who we're going to give a pass and play the song that he's on anyway. Band was called the Riverdales. I saw them in 1995 opening up for Green Day. This song's off their self-titled Lookout debut record. It's called Rehabilitated. Yeah, rehabilitated.
that was rehabilitated by the Riverdales. Nice pick there, Adam Eisenberg, straight out of 1995. Let's start this week's news. Big shenanigans going down at Punk Rock Bowling, fellas. What happens was every year Punk Rock Bowling, they have, contrary to popular belief, Punk Rock Bowling is not just concerts. There actually also is a legitimate bowling tournament. Well, here's what happened, is there was a band called Teen Girls. When you apply to play at Punk Rock Bowling, you have to let the Punk Rock Bowling people know your average. If your average is too high, you actually aren't allowed to bowl in the contest because you're considered semi-pro or like a very good amateur. The idea for the Punk Rock Bowling tournament is for true amateurs or just regular Joes to bowl and have a good time and try to compete. Well, what happened was this band, Teen Girls, signed up, and there was a lot of back and forth, but they were a little ambiguous about what their bowling score was, their bowling averages, and apparently they lied to the Punk Rock Bowling founders about their averages and said, oh, we're not that good. Turns out that a bunch of them, or maybe all of them on the team, actually were semi-pro bowlers or you know, regular amateur bowlers that like bowl in leagues and stuff, and their averages were much higher than they reported to Punk Rock Bowling. Well, of course, they won the Punk Rock Bowling tournament, and only after they won and took the prize money, and I don't know how much the prize money was, Punk Rock Bowling discovered that these guys had lied about their averages and basically had brought in ringers to win the tournament and take the money. Punk Rock Bowling asked the guys to return the money. The guys did not return the money, and so it looks like they kind of swindled Punk Rock Bowling out of the cash. First of all, do either of you guys know like how much like money they won, or I guess is this a really lame thing to do, Adam White? This is a pretty lame thing to do, right? Or is it cool?
Like what? Is it cool to swindle Punk Rock Bowling? No, that's not cool. The prize money was not a lot at all. I forget where I read the number for it, but it's something that as far as prize money goes is pretty nothing. Like I think it's like it might be like $1,000 or something, right? So it's not a significant amount of money, but this whole thing is an affront to the culture of the weird little punk rock bowling community that's been there over the years. And I think I think like it's less about the lost money and it's more about someone kind of coming into this group and fucking with it in this way. In a way, it's punk rock bowling having to sort of deal with the shitty reality that as that event has become more of a popular thing, you know, it started to lose a little bit of its intimacy. And I guess this is the kind of shit that can happen because of that. Because, I mean, like these days, punk rock bowling, the actual bowling part of it, I think happens at three or four alleys throughout Vegas. Where is it here? Yeah, nearly 1,000 bowlers spread over four bowling centers, right? And they even say in their article that, you know, they can't watch everyone at every, you know, at every center. Like they have to have some trust that people are kind of on the up and up when they're participating in this. And, you know, and that having something be that large, it opens it up for all of a sudden you have this team of ringers come in and everyone's like, well, who's that? Oh, whatever. You know, we don't know who half these people are on the 1,000, you know, people bowling. And I'm really trying not to be this like when I used to go to punk rock bowling, but I don't know. It's kind of relevant. So I'm going to do it. We used to go to punk rock bowling like every year. Punk teams went like 4 or 5 years in a row. I've got a bunch of posters sitting on my floor right next to me. So I'm going to go look at them and tell you what year. So make like Jeopardy music for like 18 seconds. Hold on.
Do, 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 do.
All right, shut up. You know, we could have just had Greg cut that out, but that would be not a, you know, that would not be a very punk news podcast way of doing things. All right, I'm looking at these posters that I have sitting here on my table. 2006, we were there. 2008, 2007, so this era, I feel like there's another poster, I don't know where it is, and the year before that, something, wherever it is. Anyways, that's when Punk News used to field teams, and we had, I don't know if we had a couple teams for a while. I feel like we had two teams. And for us, when you went, you got the and this was still back when everyone was all bowling in the same alley. And you know, so all the group was there at the same time. There was like two or three different, I don't know my bowling terminology, seatings throughout the day, I guess. You know, gaggles. There were different, huh?
Gaggles. They're called gaggles.
Yeah. There were two different gaggles that you could be a part of, like gaggle A or gaggle B. But generally it was all the people that were there. And a lot of the times people that weren't bowling at the one time were just hanging out drinking when the other teams were bowling. So everyone was sort of in the same area. So it was that small. And we always got the impression that when we were there and we were doing it, there was like two distinct kind of two distinct attitudes amongst the teams that were there. There were teams like the Punk News teams where we are not bowlers and we don't really know how to bowl and we've never played together before. And most of us hadn't met in person before we'd actually get to these things. So our job was to drink and have fun and generally be horrible, but be horrible in a way that you don't drink so much that you fuck up someone else's game, right? So contain your horribleness and just be gloriously bad at this, right? So that was our thing. And that was, I think, a lot of the teams that were there, especially bands that just like would put in a team. But then there was a few teams where you could tell they took this shit incredibly seriously. And those were generally the teams that I'm pretty sure must like – play together outside of punk rock bowling. And these would be like the team from BYO, the team from Epitaph, to a degree, even the teams from Fat, although I'm pretty sure we played next to them a few years and they were, you know, they weren't as serious as the teams from like Epitaph or anything like that. But these guys were playing to win and they were good. And it's interesting that the comments that Punk Rock Bowling made about these guys has said that, oh, you know, they would have disqualified them if their averages were too high. And I'm thinking that, like, I bet you a lot of those guys that were on those Epitaph teams that were, like, really fucking good, they had high averages. Like, they were bowlers. They had clearly been training prior to the Punk Rock Bowling event to do this. But they were members of the community, I think, so that was cool. This has grown to a degree now that you could have this team of like a team name that no one's ever heard of and a bunch of guys that no one knows, you know, come in, they say, oh, hey, we're some schlubs. Here's our team name. Here's our averages. And then, you know, because just of the numbers, the punk rock bowling organizers have got to go like, okay, sure. You know, you're in, give us your $200. And then it turns out that no, these are actually like a bunch of ringers that were really, really good. It's like, I guess the unfortunate reality of the event being this big now. And I don't even know what they do about it, because the reason it got this big was because it's awesome. And, you know, everyone likes doing it. And, you know, being able to have a team in it was a big fun thing. They've clearly opened it up more than it was. Cause I remember we were a little bit worried the year that we didn't go. Cause we're like, oh no, we're going to lose our spot. Like our team won't be grandfathered in for next year sort of thing. But clearly now that they have this many people, it's opened up. But, you know, what do you open it up because more people want to be having fun with this, or do you turn it into a more exclusive thing and that's not really punk rock, right? Like it sucks. It's a shitty position that punk rock bowling and BYO and those guys are kind of stuck in, and these dicks are just grinding it in by, you know, trying to scam $1,000 worth of cash out of, you know, who does that?
Dicks,
right? Like who goes, what do you, like, you sit around in your buddy's garage and you're like, we got to go find like some weird shitbag bowling tournament somewhere that we can like roll into, dominate, and then disappear with. Like, it sucks. That sucks. I feel bad.
I don't know. I feel bad about it. It just, you know, something about it just doesn't seem right. Although it's definitely a consequence of the scale of the event now. I mean, one solution maybe is to split the thing into two divisions, like an amateur division and an elite division, where, you know, those people with higher averages can compete. But, you know, I don't know whether they want the hassle or not.
there's no good answer, because like that answer is like make more rules in bureaucracy, right?
Right.
I'm sure that's like, yay, let's punk rock bowling, let's add more rules and bureaucracy to it, right? Like, oh, like I don't know, I feel super bad because it's like your innocence is lost. It's like you can never go back. What can you do? You know, awkward sexual metaphor complete, you know, one of those things. So anyways, that sucks. That's too bad. These dicks should give the money back.
They won't. They're dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they publicly shamed them. They posted the links to like all their social media and all that in an effort to kind of, you know, make them look bad. And it doesn't seem like they're budget on giving the money back.
Adam, is that fair game? Posting people's social media and stuff all over?
I mean, I hate to say it is or it isn't, because I think it's more complicated than that. I mean, if somebody stole $1,000 from you, would you be like, hey, this asshole stole $1,000 from me, but I'm not going to post this Facebook page? No, you'd post this Facebook page and be like, hey, everybody, this asshole is the guy who did it. So
I'm totally okay. Totally okay doing this. Like if you are going to be, you know, if you're going to treat someone in a way that is, you know, contrary to what decent society would expect of you to do, and you are going to have a public presence, then you have to deal with those two things. Like those aren't mutually exclusive. So, I mean, on the other hand, like, don't like hang out at front of these people's houses and like burn down their cars or anything, but you know. Little public yelling, I suppose, can't hurt.
The problem with that, though, is we can push this to next week or get into it now. Is you guys remember when Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin and Jesse Jackson tweeted what he thought was George Zimmerman's house, but it turned out it was an elderly couple's house, and people were like giving them death threats, and they had to move, and I think the old guy actually died from the stress.
I think we just need to train to be better vigilantes. Like Batman, Batman wouldn't go fuck up some old people just because someone was like, you know, the Joker's in this house, right? He'd do his research and make sure, because he's Batman. So it's, you know, you got to be more like Batman. That's it. Yeah. So anyways, speaking of Batman, Fat Records, they are planning to celebrate their 25 years as a label by bringing back the Fat Music series with its first release in over 5 years. This is going to be called Fat Music Volume 8, Going Nowhere Fat. It's coming out on August 7th of this year. It's going to have a new and unreleased material from a bunch of label veterans, such as NoFX, Western Edition, Leftover Crack, and Swinging Utters. Although, if you're me, I would not consider Western Addiction and Leftover Crack fat. Veterans, come on.
Fat veterans? Well, I mean, Fat put out the SFH records.
Yeah, but even that.
Adam, you're wrong. Because Fat Records did put out the CD version of Leftover Crack's Deadline in 2005.
I'm just saying that for me, old school Fat's older school than when Leftover Crack was involved. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Anyways, as well as newcomers like Nightbirds and Pears. This is all going on along with the bands or the labels recently announced Fat Wrecked for 25 Years tour. So there's a ton of bands on this thing. There's 25 tracks on it. You got basically anyone that is an active band that's on Fat right now is on this thing. You got your Banner Pilots, your Masked Intruders, you know, Me First and the Gimme Gimme, of course. CJ Ramone's got a track on here. Less Than Jake, Strung Out of the, you know, Tricky Ricky Frankel's favorite band. You know, the Flatliners are on here. Morning Glory, which is actually Ricky Frankel's favorite band. I don't know why I'm talking about him so much because he's not on the show tonight. You know, Western Addiction, Real McKenzie's. I've already mentioned Western Addiction.
Bad Cop, which is Ricky Frankel's favorite band.
Yeah, I wonder what Ricky Frankel's doing right now. This is coming out. It's got music on it. One of the rare comps that we'd seem to have announced anymore these days. Adam, what's your history with the Fat comps? Do you listen to those things as a kid?
Yes, I think I have all of them. And they were, you know, at the time when there was no internet, which is a time I think at least the three of us remember, it was not always that easy to find out about new bands. So, you know, you pick these comps up, I think, you know, starting with the second or third one, they actually had them at the record stores in the mall. But, you know, you grab one there or you end up seeing a band live and, you know, they have a couple of them with them. And that's really how you discovered a lot of those fat bands that kind of define what the label's all about. So I think this is pretty cool.
I feel like 1996's Survival of the Fattest is the one that I tend to remember the most out of this. Not for any, you know, it's the better of them reason. It's just the one that I had back in the 90s. So
will the kids be bumping this, or is this just for dudes like us that are saying, oh man, I love the age of the low cost comp?
Nothing's for the kids these days. Everything is for 30-year-old fat people now. That's I meant that as, like, you know, overweight people, not as fat wrecked people, but it also works for that. So yeah, sure, whatever. I don't know, like, isn't this how it works now? Like, we're everything is being made for people that's our age. Like, why are they making, you know, why do they keep trying to revive, you know,
Transformers
and shit, because they've gone like, hey, these kids that grew up in the 80s have money now. Let's try to do something with that. I don't know. I'd like some of that money. But I don't know. Will kids get into this? Do kids listen to this stuff? Like, fat's always kind of like, fats seem to still be releasing the kind of music that would interest us, as they've always been releasing. So, like, it's like, I got to imagine, like, Fats' audience has been aging.
Do you think,
in a way that, say, like, Epitaph's audience doesn't?
Do you think, like, Bad Cop, Bad Cop and Pears is an attempt to get the younger kids? Banner Pilot, maybe MASH Intruder?
I don't know. Like, I think that's like those bands are all, I mean, they're younger, and they bring like a younger audience with them, but they're not, they're on contrary to the kind of stuff that Fat puts out. Like, I take it completely at face value when Fat Mike says, yo, I'm totally into this Pears band, everyone should check it out. I don't know if he would say yo, right? But like, I take that at face value in a way that I don't really take it at face value when Breckerowitz says, everyone go listen to Ronnie Radke. He's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, all these new bands on Fat, they still kind of appeal to us that are now older. So I don't know. I don't know if they appeal to 16-year-olds.
You know, one thing I think that's really interesting, though, about this is, you know, when compilations were a thing that you wanted to pick up, you know, because you would learn something from them, you know, they were cheap. I mean, labels put out, you know, $5 CDs, and bands would take them with them on tour, and you'd get them, you know, they'd throw you one if you bought their record or a t-shirt or something. Now this is, you know, it's a vinyl 12 inch. It's you can pre-order it. So it is kind of, you know, it seems more like a retro nostalgic play in that sense than it does functioning as an actual compilation, you know, as far as introducing you to what the label's all about.
Adam White and Adam Eisenberg, Give Them the Boot versus Fat Rex versus what was the other one, like Addicted to You or whatever? Or
Hopelessly Devoted to You. And then the Epitaph ones are Punkorama, of course.
And Punkorama. What do you guys pick? I got to go with Give Them the Boot, because more rare tracks, more bands that were up my alley at the time, and a fairly wide variety of sound.
Adam, what do you think?
The first Give Them the Boot is pretty awesome. The earlier Fat comps, I mean, the Fat comps are pretty consistently good through that era. Punkorama, I mean, the first one is kind of legendary, but after that, they weren't quite as exciting to me. I would kind of go with the Fat comps.
I'm on board with John and the Give Them the Boots. The first two Give Them the Boot records were amazing, and they had all kinds of, I would like to have those things like as actual, you know, albums that I could listen to. Like, there's so much crazy rare. There's stuff on those from like one-off bands that clearly they just cooked up to be on the comp. Like, there's the Snipers
or whatever, it's like Rancid as a different name.
A bunch of them are just like, it's like Vic Gregorio and Tim Armstrong and whoever, right? Like, form these bands. oh God, I can't remember some of their names right now. There was the Silencers.
That's what it is.
Like, that might have been a real band, but hey, they were on there for like one thing. After Give Them the Boot 2, those comps started to have like more like, here's what's on the label this year, and a little bit less like, here's what weird shit Tim is listening to. But anyways.
Give Them the Boot 2, I got just to wrap it up. Give Them the Boot 2 is legendary, man. It's got Choking Victim F-, a Leftover Crack, and Indie K. Give Him the Boot 2 is my favorite. I love Give Him the Boot 2.
So anyways, yeah, I mean the early Punkrama, you know, I would go with those otherwise. Back when Epitaph had like a lot of weird garage bands that were on the label and stuff like that. Like those were, that was always neat. And it's actually kind of cool to revisit those and just like listen to what kind of label that was, because it was maybe more of a garage punk label when New Bomb Turks were one of like the main bands on Epitaph. Like that's pretty crazy. So anyways, let's talk about one more thing that came out before we'll jump to another song here. The new record from High on Fire, which is called Luminiferous, is coming out on the 23rd of June on the E1 Music label, and it is streaming. It's now streaming over at npr.org. We posted this. John, why do you want to talk about the new High on Fire record?
Because High on Fire rules, man. Somebody called High on Fire the new Motorhead, and it's kind of true. All the songs are kind of the same, but all the songs friggin' rock. I don't have a whole lot to say about this, except for I'm so glad Matt Pike is up there still doing energetic, nasty, kind of dirty sounding, like not real clean, brutal, slashing, straight up, I guess, thrash, mid-80s influence heavy metal, but with a modern edge, if you will. I realize that sounds like a marketing sheet, but High on Fire rules. Go see High on Fire. This track is cool. It's just High on Fire doing what High on Fire does. The only thing that could top this wise would be a new Sleep record, but this is a banging track. High on Fire kicks ass.
Yeah, this is cool. This is the kind of metal I can get behind.
Yeah, you know what? Me too. This is not usually the kind of stuff that I listen to, but you know, I turned this on and I lost the window that it was playing in, and then it just kept playing, and I was like, cool, all right, I can deal with this. And I listened to it probably on repeat a few times yesterday. So yeah, go check out the new High on Fire record. It is pretty cool. Let's play another track from 1995 here. John, what do you got?
Hey, I got a double whammy. I got a punk band covering a punk band. Let's play a rare song by Sublime. As you listeners all know, I love Sublime. I think both Adams are anti-Sublime. Listen, people, you need to get hip to Sublime. I know they got a real bro-ish, frat boy-ish audience. Forget all that. Sublime is a super, super, super clever band. They combine punk with ska with reggae. And if you know a lot about reggae, they slip a lot of cool references to like reggae classics into their tunes and stuff. They slip in some references to hip-hop. And also, the music is just so great. And when I'm having a shitty week, I put on Sublime. I feel a little bit better. When I'm having a good week, I put on Sublime. It's the best thing ever. I freaking love Sublime, man. Frankly, they don't get quite enough critical respect, if you ask me. I think it's because they were fairly massively successful. But really, Sublime is one of the most clever bands in punk rock slash ska slash rock ever. Not the greatest, but way up there, if you ask me. What we're going to do is we're going to play a track off their 1995 single, Bad Fish. What we're going to play is a live version of their Bad Religion cover called We're Only Gonna Die for Our Arrogance. So this is Sublime covering Bad Religion off their 1995 release, and this was recorded live in San Francisco on September 9, 1994.
Yeah. Zach.
And we're back. And listen, I know it can't get much that was Sublime covering Bad Religion. And I know it can't get much more punk than Sublime. I mean, I know Sublime's about as punk as it gets. But let's talk about a band that is punker than Sublime. Let's talk about the Sex Pistols. The internet was all up in a rage about this, and I've got a strong opinion about this. The Sex Pistols are now going to be featured on a Virgin MasterCard credit card. And basically, the credit card just says the Sex Pistols and Anarchy in the UK. And tellingly, it has the Virgin logo in the upper right-hand corner. Virgin's money director kind of had this laughable, I think laughable, quote to launch the credit card. In launching these cards, we wanted to celebrate Virgin's heritage and difference. The Sex Pistols challenge convention and the established ways of thinking, just as we are doing today to shake up UK banking. And also, there's another quote where they say that you can put revolution in your pocket. So it's laughable. I mean, well, this idea is laughable. But Adam, before I say my opinion, what's your opinion of the Sex Pistols credit card?
First of all, I will confess that my wife wants one.
Really?
Yes.
Ironically or non-ironically?
I think a little bit of both. But I mean, at this point, I can't really get too worked up about the idea of, you know, the Sex Pistols logo being branded on credit cards. I mean, at this point, it's really not that sacred. It's been branded on just about everything. You know, John Lydon's hawking butter on British TV. So, you know, the idea that it was something sacred until this moment, I think, is a little tired at this point.
Is Virgin saying that because the Pistols were signed to Virgin back in the day, that somehow it gives them some sort of, I guess, cultural heritage rights to use them in reference to their bank product today? Like, that's stretching it a little bit. This is stupid. I'm never sure how outraged I should get about this stuff. Like, on the one hand, you know, I could totally rationalize, you know, John Lydon shilling for butter if that's what he wants to do. So whatever, I'm cool with that. Go right ahead. On the other hand, this is pretty gross. I would feel better if I could hear from Johnny and see what he actually thinks of this. But, you know, and without really hearing how much of an okay he's given this sort of thing, you know, there's a part of my brain that's going that, like, oh, this has to do with whoever owns the copyright to blah 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 blah, right? So I don't know. This is dumb, but it's not the kind of thing I'm going to get angry about, because,
well, but listen, man,
you know,
I love the Sex Pistols. People say, like one commenter put, the Sex Pistols are the worst punk band of all time. Sex Pistols are maybe the best punk band of all time. Sex Pistols created punk rock, or were at least foundational in creating punk rock. The album friggin' dominates. The album is one of the greatest albums I've ever made. Sex Pistols are an amazing, amazing group. And if you're in that uber punks mode where you're like, oh, the Sex Pistols are stupid, you need to get real. You need to take a good hard look at yourself in the mirror and realize just how amazing, how daring, and how new the Sex Pistols were, and how shocking they still are. I want to back John Lydon up. I backed John Lydon up on the Discovery Planet show. I backed John Lydon up on the butter commercial. I can't back this credit card. This credit card's stupid. That being said, as Adam White said, we don't know what John Lydon thinks of this. And honestly, I don't know who owns the Sex Pistols name. But more importantly, is I don't know who owns – well, actually, I do know that Virgin owns the imagery associated with Nevermind the Bollocks and the Anarchy in the UK single and that kind of stuff. So I want to believe that John Lydon has nothing to do with this, and he can't stop Virgin from making this credit card because Virgin owns the rights to this imagery. Now, I don't know if that's accurate, and I don't know if John Lydon owns a piece of the Sex Pistols trademark and there'd be an issue here or not. I don't know what the contracts say. I'd like to hear what John Lydon says on this, but I want to believe that this is Virgin just kind of being bastards and doing it without any control from the Sex Pistols or John Lydon. And I will not be anti John Lydon until I find out otherwise. And even then, I will be disappointed, but I will not turn my back on them.
Yeah, this is dumb. I don't know. It's like I feel that, like, as far, like, the rest of the world has sort of already decided that they don't like the Sex Pistols anymore. So it's a little bit of an echo chamber when I have to come on this show and be like, you know, you're all dumb for not, you know, giving any respect to the Sex Pistols. Like, people have made their decision on that, so it's not something I need to argue anymore, I guess. But this doesn't help. Anyways, yeah, that happened. Adam, what else is going on this week?
So Ceremony, who's a band I've talked about a couple times on the podcast, they released a remix. It's called the Liberation Remix of a track off their recent record, The L-Shaped Man, called Your Life in France. The remix was done by David West of Total Control, Rank Xerox, and Rat Columns. And this remix deconstructs the original and stretches it out into 4 minutes of controlled chaos, according to a quote. I didn't have exactly the same opinion, but what did you guys think?
This is what I wanted the new album to have in it, honestly. This song is not a thumb snapper. This song, like, oh, it's a great tune. This song is a very abstract. It's basically more noise than it is music. But I think, like, if Ceremony had one of these kinds of tracks for every three or four of the tracks they had on the new album, what's the new album called? Not Zoo. The new album's called L-Shaped Man. If they had something really far out for every, like, three or four of the tracks they had on the L-Shaped Man, it would have probably been one of my favorite records of the year, just because it, you know, it has the cool, normal tracks and something just far out that's just there to challenge you but then brings you back in. So I dug this for what it was trying to do. I just wish the album was more daring like this is. Side note, I saw Rank Xerox open for Neon Piss, both really good bands.
This I appreciate what you're saying there. We're like, you know, that record would be better if there was more stuff that was just, you know, some weirdness peppering it out, right? And I agree. That said, like, this in isolation isn't really something that I want to listen to. Like, it's not, I listened to this for the sake of the podcast and I was like, that was weird. But there's not a lot of times during my day when I go, I need some ambient noise to, you know, freak out to or whatever people do with stuff that sounds like this. So, you know, it would have been cool to actually be on a record, but hey, yeah.
Well here's some. I'm just going ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just like, this band is getting hammered, isn't it? Like they're like,
dude, they're people are
not, at least the critical press is not into this record.
I think somebody must have said something to piss somebody off or something. They are getting spanked worse than almost any other band I've seen get spanked in their position. Pitchfork spanked them so bad. And then quite strangely, Rolling Stone spanked them pretty bad too. And I am acquaintances with the writer that writes for Rolling Stone. It was Corey Gow. Very, very good writer. I would say his main job is news guy, not critic, but he's an excellent record review writer. But he spanked him too, which really surprised me, because he's not the kind of critic that usually spanks bands. So I don't know if people spanked him, just it's like, how dare you touch Joy Division? Only Joy Division can do what Joy Division did. Or if people just thought, well, Ceremony, you had promise. I mean, well, Ronette Park was great. Zoo suggested promise. But because you did not capitalize on that promise 100%, we're going to spank you. They are just taking a critical, critical spanking. And frankly, the record's not the most amazing album ever, but it's a good record. It's definitely not deserving of the spanking they're getting.
Well, if people aren't going to be into Ceremony, John, what are they going to be into?
Well, people are into this, and this kind of surprised me, man. The Svetlanas, which is a Russian band, they released a new video. It's called I Must Break You. And the video is pretty hardcore. I mean, the actual music is kind of just jacked up, kind semi street punk, just normal punk, I guess. But it's very high energy. But in the video, they kidnap a guy and are holding a gun to his head and stuff. And the lead vocalist, like, her eyes are like really wide, and the guy's like begging for his life, like while they have him like kidnapped and stuff. The kids were like, that was awesome. Then somebody else says, this is effing great. Man, like, I don't know why, but for some reason this video, like, was actually kind of scary to me. Like, I thought it was a little too intense for me. Like, when the guy's, like, tied up and, like, putting a gun to their head and like pulling the trigger. I'm like, damn, that's heavy duty shit. Like, Adam White, what'd you think of this, man?
This is two things. One, the reaction of our commenters was really interesting, because usually when we post something that is not one of the bands that people expect to hear us talk about, I don't want to slag on the bands that you've just apologized to, but I'll mention them. Like, you know, if we're not posting something about the Menzinger, sometimes people are like, what the fuck is this, right? I think this applies a little bit to your thing about Ariel Pink, right? So yeah, this is clearly in the category of weird shit that no one has ever heard of, and why are we posting about it? So I was expecting there to be a little bit of that, but no, people were like someone actually said, like, post more things like this, which is interesting. Super, super interesting to me. But anyways, though, yeah, this is scary, and it's scary in kind of a comedic way. Like the band's rocking away. Don't get me wrong. And I've got to imagine that they are self-conscious of how crazy this video makes them look. But their lead singer just looks like she's just nuts. The rest of the band is all just the rest of them are all just standing around with their arms crossed, like tough guys, not moving or saying anything for a lot of it. As she just, you know, face right in the camera, eyes bulging out of her head. It's totally terrifying. But yeah, everyone should go watch this.
Yeah, I found the song pretty good. I did find the video terrifying.
Yeah, like I found it genuine. Like, not like, oh, it's terrifying. Ha ha. Like, I was sort of disturbed by the video.
I mean, terrifying in a holy fuck, this is intense.
I don't know, man. I just felt uneasy when they were like putting guns in people's heads and pulling the trigger. I was like, damn. Maybe I'm becoming soft. Maybe that now that I'm a lover, not a fighter, I've become soft.
It's true. Oh, that's your new mode in life, right? Is to just be
wearing tie dye.
Yeah.
Putting flowers in people's gun barrels.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, so everyone should go watch this. It's good. It's fun. Let's talk about one more thing that that happened this past week. There has been another entry in the AV Club's the Undercover series? Is that what they call it?
Undercover.
Where they have a list of bands or a list of songs, and then bands come into their studio throughout the season and pick off a song from the list, cross that song out, and cover it, and then whatever's left is there for the next band to come in to do, so you can get some really weird cover combinations out of here. So Screaming Females were on there, and they ended up having to play Taylor Swift's Shake It Off. There's a video of it over at the AV Club, and you should go check it out, because Screaming Females are fun. And I don't know, John, you're really big on what the kids like these days. Did they do justice to Shake It Off?
They did, man. I thought this just goes to show the talent of all three members of that band. I mean, people are going crazy for Taylor Swift, and I think kind of it is like, I'm so punk that I'll like the most pop thing I can find. People are like, oh, Taylor Swift is amazing. I don't think Taylor Swift's that special. I think Taylor Swift is okay pop music. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever. I think it's actually – I actually think Taylor Swift's music could be a little bit better than it is. That being said, it's okay. I think that the Screaming Females take a purely pop song, convert it into a rock song, which is not easy to do, and just make it this catchy, awesome rock-based song. And it just goes to show the talent of all three members of that band. And I think that band is kind of in their prime right now with the last album, which was called Rose Mountain. And they're just kicking ass, man. This is cool. And I guess it goes to show, I guess the song maybe is fundamentally a well-written song.
You know, what I like about their cover is that it's fairly sparse for the first couple verses of it. And I don't even think they're barely touching the guitar for a good portion of it. And then just, you know, all of a sudden it just turns that corner, and then they just like, in the, you know, everything gets a little bit more intense. They play a solo. It's good. It's a good cover in the way that they executed it, at least. I don't know if that actually reflects what this song actually sounds like, because I don't think I've actually heard Shake It Off outside of, like, I don't know, it being on the radio in Walmart or something like that.
It's a little too repetitive, you know. It could go somewhere interesting after it starts. It starts a theme but doesn't evolve off that theme. That's a very critical answer. I sound like the guys reviewing Ceremony. 3.2.
However, there is a term for what you for the phenomenon that you explained just a second ago here.
Spanking?
Where you were saying that like a lot of punk people that you know are professing to be Taylor Swift fans.
Indeed.
There is a term for this. I had never heard this term, but apparently you can find some incredibly nerdy discussions about this phenomenon online, and certain music critic blogs and stuff like that have just latched onto this as something that needs to be just debated into the ground. And they're calling it poptimism.
Poptimism. Hmm.
Where
I call it posers.
We've gone so far around from the hip indie rock thing to ironically we're gonna like all of these mainstream pop songs to no, we're actually kind of liking all these mainstream pop songs to, you know, we're not even worried about credibility anymore because it's not a thing that's real, and we're actually just going to like the mainstream pop songs as if they were credible independent music songs. And like, there's people that are like on various ends of this spectrum, and then there's a backlash against this, and it's, oh my God, it's super interesting to me because there's an interview on Pitchfork with Dan Behar of Destroyer and New Pornographers, and Dan is famously one of these musicians that is, you know, gonna write weird little pop song, like little indie pop songs, little difficult avant-garde, you know, indie stuff sometimes, and who will, he professes in this interview to basically not being in tune with any of this mainstream stuff, which everyone that was an independent artist used to do, but now that's not something people say. Now the thing is, like, you know, if you're an independent whatever, you know, you got to also be, you know, down with, you know, Kanye West and Pharrell and whatever else is popular, right?
Yeah, it's a crime to not like Beyonce. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he expressed that opinion, that which is like a little bit of an old fashioned opinion these days. You're like, I don't like any of this pop music. And then this was pulled into The Concourse, which is the blog on Gawker that's attached to Deadspin. And they were debating Dan Behar's opinion on pop music and using that to have this wider discussion about this poptimism phenomenon, if I'm even remembering the word properly, where people are non-ironically, but maybe ironically, but probably non-ironically, you know, liking all this stuff. And the comments on it go so far down this rabbit hole of discussion that I seriously lost like 2 hours reading it the other day. So anyways, yeah, that's a thing. That's where I'm going to leave it. Here we go. So we're going to play one more song from 1995 before we get out of this thing. This is one where I don't know if this is on the review slate yet, John. I'm not going to do it because I don't actually do anything around here. But, you know, if we were a good organization, we would be reviewing this one. And I got to imagine that it's just going to be a dream of mine. But we're going to play something by the self-titled 1995 Planet Smashers full-length that was released on Stomp Records. This was the back during the Canadian third wave ska renaissance. This is the album that launched Stomp, that launched a whole little scene in Montreal. And it's full of super goofy third wave ska stuff. So we're going to play Mission Aborted from the Planet Smashers off their 1995 self-titled record.
disguise, but I'm gonna find you out. I'm gonna turn you out. I gotta burn you out. Well, you got an A for me. You say you're gonna get me eventually, but I'm on to your plan. Cause you can't win when you don't understand that the mission.
We're back and we are done. That is a Punk News podcast for whatever week this is, episode 252. If you want to email us, this podcast at punknews.org. John, any parting words for the people?
Peaceful John is in the house. I got roses in my hair. I'm playing Grateful Dead on an acoustic guitar. Peace, brother. Peace.
Adam Eisenberg, thank you for grounding this between John's newfound hippieism and my existential crisis.
I try to be the glue.
All right. Well, that is all. So we'll see you guys next week.